Let's go ahead and get to the stories that matter. Well, more Palestinians have been killed in the Gaza Strip as the Israeli military continues to pound the blockaded territory with air and artillery strikes. The latest attack targeted Gaza City's Shujaa neighborhood, killing 8 civilians and injuring nearly a dozen others. Airstrikes on the city of Rafah and Al-Mawasi refugee camp also claimed the lives of several Palestinians. Israeli warplanes also attacked Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia, leaving several medical staff injured. The Israeli genocide in Gaza began in October 2023. Over 44,000 people, mostly women and children, have been killed since then. The attacks have also injured more than 104,200 others. A Hague-based court is hearing a case against the Dutch government to stop arms exports and trade with the Israeli regime. The lawsuit was filed by 12 human rights organizations, including Al-Haq Group, last month. They are suing the Netherlands for failing to prevent the Israeli genocide in Gaza and other regimes' violations of international law. It has called for a ban on export and transit of weapons and weapon parts to the regime and a ban on all Dutch trade and investment relations with Tel Aviv. Since Israel's genocidal war began in Gaza, the Netherlands has granted 9 permits for arms exports to Israel, totaling 12 million euros. A new UN report has highlighted the rising settler violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. The report published by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says settler violence, intimidation, and harassment have driven more than 1,700 Palestinians from their homes in just over a year. It said in one of the instances in such attacks on November 15th, assailants threatened Palestinian families to leave their homes at gunpoint and warned they would be set on fire if stayed. Israeli settlers have increased raids on Palestinian towns and villages in the occupied West Bank since Israel's war in Gaza began in October last year. Many of these settler attacks are being done under the protection of Israeli soldiers. For more details about the settler violence in the West Bank, we were joined earlier by our correspondent in Ramallah, Naqat Hamad.
These actions are quite very old for the Palestinians over here in the West Bank. The settlers we were talking about, Israeli settlers, they did not only threaten to set a family on fire, but they actually did it to the Dawash family, where the mother, the father, and both of their children were burned to death. And the sole survivor was Ahmed Dawash, and became a symbol over here for the burned Palestinian childhood in the hands of these settlers. These are not just words or threats. These are actions that Palestinians over here in the Palestinian villages are living every day. Let's move a little bit closer. We have been covering the settler violence almost on a daily basis. Just yesterday, the settlers have attacked some of the villages of south, in the south of Nablus. We are talking about settlements that have stolen the land from Palestinian villages, stolen resources from Palestinian villages, and also making a lot of trouble for the Palestinians who are living inside the nearby villages. Why these areas? The answer is because that the settlers are trying to seize land in these areas, which is considered to be sea areas that is under the full control of the Israeli regime. After which is a division for the land that has been made over here after the Oslo agreement.
Israeli warplanes have carried out fresh airstrikes on the Lebanese capital of Beirut as the carnage continues with no end in sight in the Arab country. The regime once again heavily bombed the southern Beirut suburbs of Dahiya. The Israeli military also hit the town of Naqoura in the Tyre district of southern Lebanon with incendiary bombs. Meanwhile, an Israeli air attack on an ambulance killed 2 paramedics in the southern town of Deir Anun, Ras Al Ain. The health ministry says the death toll from Israeli strikes in the northeastern Baalbek region has risen to 47. Since last October, nearly 3,600 Lebanese have been killed, with over 15,200 others injured in Israeli attacks. While the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has launched new retaliatory attacks against Israeli targets. The group targeted a gathering of Israeli troopers near the Lebanese city of Al-Khiyam with a barrage of reprisal rockets. Hezbollah fighters have also hit several Israeli settlements with a squadron of drones. Since the beginning of the Gaza genocide, the Lebanese resistance group has been carrying out operations against Israeli troopers and bases. The movement says the attacks are being carried out in defense of the people of Lebanon and in solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza. We are joined now live by our correspondent there in Beirut, Maryam Saleh. Maryam, I mean, since earlier I spoke to you, there has been a lot of developments. There has been, again, attempted incursions by the Israeli entity on the southern borders, actually, of Lebanon. And, again, more airstrikes inside the southern suburbs of Beirut. But despite all of this, the resistance has been attacking and pounding the entity pretty hard, has it not?
It definitely has, Caitlin. Now, of course, in the latest, we learned from the Lebanese Ministry of Health that at least three paramedics have been killed in southern Lebanon. Three others were injured, as well as their vehicle came under attack in South Lebanon. And, of course, this adds up to the number and the death toll of the medical staff alone, which is considered relatively very high, actually, because in all standards, by all rules of war, medical staff, ambulance cars, paramedics are not to be harmed. Of course, we've seen the Israelis constantly targeting paramedics, not only now, even before, during the support front from Lebanon for the sake of Gaza. We also learned that another Lebanese citizen was killed as his motorbike came under attack in the area of Kfar Tibnit, which is close to the city of Nabatiye. Of course, the city of Tyre has been under very, very heavy bombardment today. Specifically, the Israelis sent warnings to almost complete neighborhoods and towns in the surrounding of the city of Tyre, as well as the city itself, which has been also constantly bombed by the Israeli fighter jets. But we also learned from the statements of the resistance that they also targeted a fighter jet over the city of Sidon, which forced this fighter jet to leave Lebanese airspace. However, of course, we have constant flying over flights from not only warplanes but also the drones that usually come and precede Israeli attacks. And after, of course, the Israeli attacks here, of course, we've seen that the Israelis will continue to only destroy this systematic destruction. The suburbs has been completely evacuated in Beirut, and still we see the systematic destruction of the residential neighborhoods as well as shops and so on. We, like I said, the resistance said that they targeted a fighter jet, but they also said they targeted Israeli forces in various different places for several times in different outskirts of the villages, especially Khiyam, where they said they targeted the Israeli forces in the outskirts other in the south of Khiyam, as well as an area which is very close to the former prison that was made by the Israelis during the occupation. And why is that important? Because it is one of the highest peaks, and it's very important for the Israeli occupation forces to try to take hold of that area. It seems up until now they are incapable of doing so, with the fact that they are being targeted constantly by Hezbollah. And Hezbollah not only is targeting the Israeli forces at the border and also in Yarin, where they launched an aerial attack with UAVs, bomb-laden UAVs that targeted an Israeli force in the outskirts of Yarin. And although we see that the Israelis are perhaps in some areas in the outskirts of the southern villages, but they are not there to stay, or it's not a walk in the park, of course, for these Israeli forces, with constantly being targeted by the resistance. We also see that Hezbollah has targeted areas that are further away, and so it's still able to launch its rockets to the depth of the Israeli regime. Once more, they targeted the technical base in Haifa, which includes the technical academy for the Israeli Air Force. They also targeted two different bases in the highest peak, actually, of the Jabal al-Sheikh, which is Mountain al-Sheikh. Two different bases, which are also part of the Golani team and the 210th Division. Of course, these are very significant bases that are used to collect intelligence, intelligence, and in addition to the attacks on other bases, whether in Haifa or the surrounding of Haifa, and the fact, of course, they have proven that they are still able to launch their rockets, and all the so-called statements by some Israeli officials saying that they were able to destroy a big portion of Hezbollah's arsenal has been proven to be inaccurate. Of course, Hezbollah has also declared that they targeted another Merkava tank in Khiyam as well. They also said that they were able to strike direct hits against that Merkava tank and to leave scores of Israeli soldiers killed or wounded among the crew of that tank specifically. And that is, of course, in addition to the other attacks that they targeted the forces near the city or the town of Kfar Kila, which is also another border town. And these are the towns that have been under constant Israeli attacks and Israeli raids throughout the past year, and not only in the last 2 months. And despite all of this, we still see Hezbollah's resistance fighters coming out of nowhere, seemingly, and fighting those Israeli forces that attempt to enter the Lebanese villages and towns. And of course, up until now, they have not been able to take full control of any one full town or village or city at the outskirts, of course, and the borders in South Lebanon.
Yes, well, Mariam, we do hear that drone strayed overhead. Please stay safe. Again, our correspondent there in Beirut, Mariam Saleh. Political analyst Radwan Rizet says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has no intention of reaching a ceasefire agreement in Lebanon.
The negotiations is failing. It has not succeeded in to reach any point at this time. All this optimism that Netanyahu and what Hochstein spread around, especially in the medias, was false information, and deep down that Netanyahu has no intention to reach any kind of an agreement with the Lebanese government. So as the operation is continuing on the ground in the south, and the failing of the Israeli army to achieve any advancement in this battle, so Netanyahu stuck there and has no way out but keep massacring and killing the civilians in Lebanon. Netanyahu thinks that what he couldn't achieve on the ground, he can achieve in negotiations. And this is not the intention of the Lebanese resistance to accept at any time, because that will integrate the sovereignty and the independence of Lebanon and will put the whole Lebanon under the umbrella of United States, America, and Israel.
Yemenis have been one of the most steadfast supporters of Palestinians throughout the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. This week, they once again turned out in numbers in a show of solidarity with the oppressed nation and to demonstrate their support for their military's operations against Israel and its allies. For more details, we were earlier joined by our correspondent Yusuf Mowdy from the venue of a demonstration in the capital, Sana'a.
The Yemeni protesters, along with their military leadership, their political leadership, they want to be at the forefront of this historic battle against a historic enemy, and that is no other than the Zionists, who these protesters, along with their government, believe are the root cause of all the problems and all of the struggle and massacre that has plagued the Muslim world for over the past 100 years or so. The protesters today, to my right, is actually the podium, and the backdrop of the podium is all of the martyred resistance leader Yahya Sinwar, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, and so on and so forth, Ismail Haniyeh. And these are the protesters who are here because they want to push the cause of these resistance leaders who sacrificed their lives defending Palestine and trying to liberate the land of Palestine. As far as the military front, Ansarullah movement, along with the Yemeni army, they are going to continue escalating their military attacks against all Israeli-linked ships, all American-affiliated warships, all British, UK, and any Western military fleets, military aircraft carriers, or any Western warships that are lurking in the Red Sea and surrounding waters, because now Yemen has declared a state of war, not just against Israel, but also against the U.S. and also against the British government, who also continues to take part in airstrikes across Yemen.
Iranians have held a pro-Palestinian demonstration outside the UN office in the capital, Tehran. The protesters slammed international bodies, including the UN, over their failure to stop Israeli atrocities in Gaza and Lebanon. They criticized the UN over its double standards when it comes to the war in Ukraine and the genocide in Gaza. The Iranians called for Israel's expulsion from the UN. Since last October, Iranians, along with other people across the world, have been holding regular rallies in condemnation of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. The regime, however, has been defiantly continuing its crimes with the U.S. support and amid international inaction. The chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps vows revenge on Israel, asserting that the continuation of war on Lebanon and Gaza will bring about the regime's own destruction. Major General Hossein Salami said all arrogant powers were hell-bent on uprooting the resistance in Lebanon, Palestine, Yemen, and Iraq, but they failed miserably. Salami urged unity among Muslims as an essential element to eradicate what he termed the root of all corruption. He called on Muslim nations to cut off support for Israel, stressing that the regime's downfall is imminent. Salami noted that no one in Israel feels safe, with many seeking refuge in shelters out of fear. The IRGC chief said Israeli officials are confused and their army is fatigued, while Hezbollah and the resistance front are gaining strength. Salami also hailed the ICC arrest warrant for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and a former war minister, calling it the end and political death of the regime. A spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says Tehran will significantly increase its nuclear enrichment capacity in response to a resolution adopted by the UN's nuclear watchdog. Behrouz Kamalvandi said Tehran plans to install new advanced centrifuges for that purpose. He added the development and consolidation of the country's nuclear infrastructure is also on the agenda. Kamalvandi stressed that Iran's nuclear industry will not be affected by Western pressure, and such hostile measures will only prompt the country to increase its capacity across various areas of the industry. The anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors was adopted on Thursday. Tehran has strongly condemned the move as politically motivated, saying it will destroy the positive atmosphere that governs Iran's relations with the IAEA. Iran's defense minister says the country will spare no effort in consolidating relations with Venezuela. Brigadier General Aziz Nasserzadeh made his comments in a meeting with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro in Caracas. Nasserzadeh said the two countries are also resolved to support entrepreneurs. Maduro, for his part, said the meeting with the Iranian defense minister will usher in a new era of relations between the two countries, both of which are under U.S. sanctions. Nasserzadeh traveled to Venezuela earlier this week to participate in the 10th meeting of the Joint Iran-Venezuela Economic Cooperation Commission. He heads the Iranian side of the commission and has also met with other senior Venezuelan officials. Stay tuned for more updates. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, tied into a war in Ukraine, confused about its identity and autonomy, the European political establishment has consigned EU member states to a period of considerable perturbation. The Eurozone economies are being buffeted by major headwinds. Hampered by high energy costs, Eurozone economies are witnessing industrial hollowing out as energy-intensive industries shudder. How EU member states individually and collectively deal with present impasse will determine the medium-term prosperity and security of the zone's citizens. In the face of its myriad challenges, the EU is showing signs of fragmentation. There are doubts about the European Commission's capacity to build a genuine and robust sense of common purpose. This is apparent across all key policy vectors: the Ukraine war, migration, and industrial development. The unquestioned commitment to the war in Ukraine is now being questioned. The loss of low-cost Russian gas and oil is rampant. Mario Draghi's recent report to the European Commission on European competitiveness acknowledges the centrality of energy costs, but did not dare name the role played by the EU and American sanctions against Russian energy. Voters are angry at the cost of the war in terms of local industries, jobs, and the adverse impact on the cost of living. Many in Europe increasingly want peace through negotiations. Hungarian and Slovakian leaders have spoken out against the continuation of the war, despite coming under intense pressure from the political mainstream. The dominant establishment view from Brussels is to continue arming the Ukrainians. A schism is apparent, not just among political leaders. Since the start of the Russia military operation in February 2022, an estimated 6 million or more Ukrainians have fled into Europe. While welcome at first, there are increasingly more signs that the refugees are beginning to overstay their welcome. The Ukraine conflict and Europe's economic problems are interrelated, resulting in increasingly high energy costs. The German economy has been in protracted stagnation. As the beating heart of European industry, the rest of the Eurozone isn't doing much better. The Eurozone as a whole is expected to achieve GDP growth of around 1% this year. With economic woes and concerns about migration, voters turn toward anti-immigration and anti-war candidates. European nations' responses to proposed tariffs on Chinese-made electric vehicles is further evidence of growing schisms across the region. The European Commission initiated a closed-door inquiry into alleged subsidies for Chinese manufacturers, resulting in proposals to impose a range of tariffs. At a vote of the 27 member states, the proposal for tariffs was supported by 10 nations, 5 opposed to the tariffs, and 12 abstained. The Commission proceeded to impose the tariffs anyway, despite the overwhelming majority of member states not supporting them. The UK, while no longer a member of the EU, is also on the cusp of economic challenges. The new Labour government's austerity measures are more likely to exacerbate the economic woes than to alleviate them, while already leading to a collapse in the administration's public standing. Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Without addressing the elephant in the room, namely resolving the energy uncompetitiveness problem, European economic policy is likely to be piecemeal. Without a coherent long-term vision, the tensions between protectionists and others are likely to continue for the foreseeable future. French President Emmanuel Macron once said that Europe will not be a geopolitical priority for the US. Like before, Macron laments the loss of European autonomy. And like before, there seems to be little clarity about the root causes of Europe's confusion and discomfort. Meanwhile, and as a consequence, the social-political situation across Western Europe is likely to become more volatile.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, trust in God. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Sister Zainab on IRIB English Radio, A to Z, speaking to you today a little bit about trust in God. Now, the first thing I'll say is that we're told that basically we should trust in Allah and, in a sense, ask of Allah for everything. So we're even told that down to the smallest thing. So let's imagine maybe you've got a broken shoelace. Now, I'm serious about this. In a sense, even that is something we should ask of Allah. We should never think that there is something that is so small we shouldn't ask Allah for. And then the other end, the opposite end, the big things, everything we ask of Allah, even if you think it is just so big and so extreme. Because remember, there are no limits on what Allah can do for us anyway. So, okay, so let's see if we can break this down a little bit. So trusting in Allah. So trust in Allah in terms in these little things. So, for example, people, if you're ill, and obviously, maybe you need to get medicine, maybe you need to go to the doctor. So what we're not saying is that you just say to Allah, oh, Allah, please make me feel better. No, what we are saying is that, yes, you say, you ask of Allah to give you speedy recovery. And you then also take measures, make efforts to maybe go and get the medication. If you need medication, go to the doctor's appointment. But this is also realizing that, you know, Allah gives you these means. You have all these tools that Allah has sent into your life. They're having clinics available, medication available. You're supposed to be using these. So there are some really nice examples that I'll go through. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio with Sister Zainab, and I'm speaking to you a little bit about trusting God. So when it comes to asking Allah to, in a sense, help us, so what it means is that, for example, it doesn't mean that we just ask Allah and then we just sit back and wait for things to happen. So you could, for example, let's say someone has no work, and so they just sit at home and they pray to Allah, make lots and lots of dua, and then they say, and they're asking for Allah, oh, Allah, please send me work, please send me work. And obviously that is not what Allah wants. We know that Allah wants us to be hardworking anyway and to always be striving to be making efforts. So what it is, of course, we ask for Allah's help, that Allah will send us the best kind of job that we need. Allah will send us all our needs anyway. We know that. That's a given. But that then means we need to put into action. We need to strive. We need to make efforts. We need to go out there, send emails. We need to go and go to the unemployment office, wherever it is we can register, and also find jobs, ads for jobs there. And we appreciate that all this, whatever we find, whatever blessing we receive as part of our efforts and our striving, are sent to us by Allah. And maybe you've had something little happen to you where you didn't even express it to Allah. Maybe just in your heart you sort of made a dua. And maybe all of a sudden, but because you're in the habit of asking Allah for things and you think, oh, that's strange. I hadn't even asked Allah for that yet. And here it is. Someone's calling me. I was just thinking to myself, oh, I'd really like this. So whatever it is, I need this. And Allah's already answered that. You know, trust in God pays off in many ways, I'm sure. So that's just a few insights. And I look forward to speaking to you again on A to Z. And this is Sister Zainab, and fi aman Allah, and farewell. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
Khalida Jarar's family and lawyer revealed the deadly conditions faced by the iconic Palestinian leader in an Israeli regime prison. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Palestinian leader Khalida Jarar has been held under administrative detention in Israeli occupation prisons without charge or trial since her arrest from her home in Ramallah on December 26, 2023. The Handala Center for the Rights of Prisoners and Ex-Prisoners recently reported that Jarar, detained in Ramla prison, is facing a systematic Israeli campaign of repression and abuse that endangers her life. Since August, Jarar has also been subjected to solitary confinement by the Israeli occupation authorities. A prominent leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, and a key national figure in the occupied West Bank, Jarar has been arrested by Israel multiple times. During her imprisonment in 2019, she suffered a devastating loss when her daughter Soha passed away at the age of 31 on July 13, 2021. Despite international appeals, the Israeli occupation authorities denied Jarar the chance to bid her daughter farewell. The 62-year-old leader, who suffers from health problems, has seen her condition worsen due to harsh imprisonment conditions and deliberate medical negligence by the Israeli regime prison administration. Jarar has spent 5.5 years in Israeli regime prisons to date, alternating between administrative detention and formal charges. On August 13th, the prison administration abruptly transferred her to solitary confinement in Nev Tirza prison in Ramallah without justification, her sister Salam Rashoud told the Palestine Chronicle. Salam said she suffers from high blood pressure, diabetes, and narrowed arteries in her head. She was suddenly told to prepare herself and then was transferred from Damon prison for women in conditions that are, to say the least, terrible. During the third week of her isolation, Jarar's lawyer was able to visit her. Jarar described her condition as being held in a grave. She explained that her narrow cell includes an inside toilet with no water, has no windows or ventilation holes, and lacks sufficient food and medical treatment. The bed in her cell is a concrete slab with a thin mattress, forcing her to sleep on the floor. Her diabetes condition is further aggravated as she is served uncooked food, Salam added. A former member of the Palestinian Legislative Council and an activist, Jarar has faced immense personal loss during her years of imprisonment. In addition to losing her daughter, she was also unable to bid farewell to her father in 2022. Less than a month after her release, in September 2022, her mother passed away. Salam said, "Prisoners spend their entire lives in detention without knowing what their charge is. Neither international institutions nor laws have succeeded in forcing Israel to end this injustice." The Handala Center confirmed that Jarar has endured extremely harsh conditions during 93 days of solitary confinement. The center stated, "The freedom fighter finds nothing but to lie down next to the door, a place where she can breathe with the least amount of oxygen, in a tragic scene that reflects the cruelty to which the prisoners are exposed." The center has called for urgent intervention by international and human rights organizations to save Jarar and other Palestinian prisoners in Israeli regime prisons. Al-Damir Foundation for Human Rights revealed that the Israeli occupation authorities recently extended Jarar's solitary confinement for another month, bringing her isolation into a third month. Her lawyer quoted her as saying, "I am dying every day. The cell is like a small closed box that doesn't allow air to enter. There is only a toilet in the cell and a small window above it, which was closed one day after I was transferred." They didn't leave me any breathing space, and there is only a small opening that I sit next to most of the time to breathe. I'm suffocating in my cell, and I'm waiting for hours to pass so that I may find oxygen molecules to breathe and stay alive. Jarrah further described her ordeal. What increased the tragedy of my isolation was the high temperatures. In short, I'm inside an oven at the highest temperature. I cannot sleep because of the high heat, and they were not satisfied with isolating me under these conditions. Arrests like Jarrah's are often used by the Zionist regime to remove Palestinian leaders from the political scene for extended periods. Administrative detention, which allows for imprisonment without charge or trial, can be renewed indefinitely at the discretion of the Israeli regime authorities. International laws oppose administrative detention, a practice the Zionist regime inherited from the British Mandate. Despite this, Israel continues to employ it, flagrantly violating international law. Legal expert Issam Abdin, who has worked with the Al-Haq Human Rights Organization, explained to the Palestine Chronicle that administrative detention constitutes two crimes, a war crime and a crime against humanity. He emphasized that Israeli occupation courts justified this form of detention under the pretext of war, which is a severe breach of international law. There are more than 30 racist laws targeting Palestinians currently being discussed in the Israeli Knesset, Abdin said. One of these laws seeks to expand the scope of administrative detention and amend the orders of the prison service, driven by the extremist far-right Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Abdin concluded, "Unfortunately, the arrest request for the Israeli leaders from the International Criminal Court didn't include what is happening in Israeli prisons and detention centers, which is shocking and a stark indicator of double standards."
For me, I'm heading off to war. God Almighty is my armor and sword. Palestine, forever Palestine. Children being killed, throwing stones in the sky. They say to their parents, "Don't worry, God is on our side." Palestine, forever Palestine. Mother, don't worry when they come for us at night. Surely they'll be sorry when God puts them right. Tell me why they do it, what was done to them. Don't they know that God is with with the oppressed and needy. He perished while the nations down rule through tyranny. Palestine, forever Palestine. Fighting for our lives, they say to their parents, we know that Palestine is our right. They say to their parents, we'll fight for what is right. They say not to worry, God is on our side. They say we'll die for Palestine, forever Palestine. Have
just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. iranradio.ir. What you just heard was an Arabi English radio program.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. My dear brothers and sisters, We have a beautiful hadith from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, today, in which he mentions that there are four women who are the best in history. It is narrated that the best women in paradise are Maryam bint Imran, Khadija bint Khuwaylid, Fatima bint Muhammad, and Asiya bint Muzahim, the wife of Pharaoh. These women hold a special place in Islamic tradition, each embodying unique virtues and exemplary character. So let's break down the significance of each of these incredible figures. First, Maryam, or Mary. There is even a chapter in Quran, a whole chapter by her name. So Maryam is revered for her unwavering faith and piety. She is celebrated as the mother of Isa alayhi salam, the great prophet of Allah. And her life story is filled with trials and miraculous events that highlight her strength and devotion to God. Go and recite the ayahs, the verses in Surah Maryam, or Surah Mary, chapter Mary in Quran. She is a model of purity and trust in divine wisdom. Next, we have like Khadija bint Khuwaylid. May Allah be pleased with her and His bless be upon her. The beloved wife of the Prophet Muhammad. Her unwavering support for the Prophet during the early years of Islam is crucial to the establishment of the Muslim community. She was loyal, she was compassionate, she was courageous, and she served as a pillar of strength for the Prophet. And then we have Fatima al-Zahra, Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, the daughter of the Prophet. She is revered not only for her relationship with her father, but also for her own contributions to Islam. Fatima embodied resilience, piety, compassion, and she played a vital role in advocating for justice and rights of the Imam Ali alayhi salam. Lastly, Asiya, the wife of Pharaoh, stands out for her remarkable courage in the face of tyranny. Despite being married to a powerful ruler, she chose to believe in Moses, Prophet Musa alayhi salam, and stood against the oppression of her husband. So, she was tortured and died in a very, very badly way. So these are examples for us, especially for our women, but not only to them, to all of us. And they are our role models, especially Lady Fatima, about whom there are many narrations, other narrations that tell us that she was the best. Even among these four, she was the best. And she's the best woman in the history of humankind and in the paradise. And inshallah, we would be true followers of Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
When it comes to the Palestinians and the U.S. Israeli genocide waged against them, there was a glimmer of hope that with the election of Trump, which got the backing of the Muslim community in the U.S., that there would be a change in the fate of Palestinians. But those hopes have faded, if not dashed, with many pro-Israeli picks, diehard Israeli supporters by the U.S. president-elect. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. Joining us first is Ray McGovern. Ray McGovern is a former CIA analyst who joins us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Also joining us is Ashish Prashar, who is a former advisor to the U.S. West Asia envoy from New York.